Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to the TIFO Football Podcast. I'm Joe Devine, and I'm delighted to be joined today by Seb Halford's Floor. Hi, Seb.
Hey, Joe Devine.
How you doing?
I'm doing great.
We're also joined by John McKenzie.
Hello.
Hi there. How are you?
Well, I'm good.
And delighted to be joined today by a very special guest, Kiva O'Neill of The Athletic.
Hello, hello.
How are you?
I'm very well.
Good. Well, I expect you are very well, having missed all the goals today.
Yeah, about that. Every time I walked out the room, a goal would happen. So then you sent me to the audio booth.
We sent you to a room on your
away.
Own. Yeah. Sadly, no goals resulted from that. But we'll talk more about that later. And now listen, there's loads to get through today. Arguably the most exciting day of the World Cup so far. Australia are through, goodness gracious me. Tunisia beat France as well. And obviously, we've just finished watching Poland, Argentina, Saudi Arabia, Mexico, which at one point, well, I guess for almost the entirety of the last 30 minutes or so there, we were just two yellow cards away from a lot drawing, a coin toss, eh? Mm-hmm. That was exciting. I was thrilled by that. And I don't mind that I didn't get it, but, you know, just the idea of maybe having had it.
Made me feel like there should be a few more steps between disciplinary record and drawing lots, like mascot fight or,
sure.
You know.
Or maybe how many of the team members are subscribed to The Athletic. Because if you visit theathletic.com/TIFO, theathletic.com/TIFO, you can find that you can avail yourself of a deal, I believe it's £1 a month for 6 months, John, isn't it?
I believe so, yes.
I think it is, John. That's
still
right.
Going on.
And yeah. I wonder how many of the Mexico or Poland players are subscribers, because, of course, you know, I'm not telling FIFA how to do their job. Although that might be a good idea. But, you know, perhaps that could be the one in between disciplinary and coin tossing.
The more subscriptions you have, the better your chance of qualifying for the round of 16.
Exactly how it should be.
Right, yes.
Theathletic.com. But that sounds bad, doesn't it? That was a bad one. But today I'll leave you in the warm hands and the cool embrace of Kiva O'Neill. Yes, we're joined by Kiva to talk. First of all, I think, should we just go to Poland and Mexico? Explain what I was just talking about there in the intro, Seb, with the yellow card situation. What happened?
Right. So towards the end of that game, an unlikely scenario emerged where we would need the tiebreaker at the end of the group stage because Poland and Mexico would, well, we're level on goals scored, we're level on goal difference, we're level on points, and well, initially, we thought they might be level on yellow cards, but actually, you made a mistake there.
I made a mistake.
Yes. I counted up wrong. You counted
you
wrong.
You got us way too excited with
that. Yeah, I was excited.
You let us
too.
All down there.
I did
Joe.
Let you down. Yeah, I'm sorry about that.
Again.
So, we had a situation where potentially, with a few more yellow cards for Poland, we might have had a group in the World Cup decided by drawing lots. Which I think I'm right in saying, and please don't shout if I'm wrong, but I think it last happened in 1968.
Yes.
But then that wasn't for groups. That was because the penalty shootout hadn't quite been invented for that European Championship.
Yeah.
So they needed to, I forget the teams, but yeah, they needed to draw lots in the dressing room after the game.
So therefore we think we're right in saying that it's never happened for this reason before, where teams have been completely inseparable.
No.
Yeah.
No. So we've been a first.
We were so close.
We were so close.
So close to that magic.
I mean, we said yesterday it's a shame to see teams go out when they have 4 points in a group stage. I mean, Mexico really tried at the end there, Kiva, but they couldn't quite get it.
They were pushing and they had so many chances as well. It just didn't happen for them. And then Saudi Arabia scored and that kind of just threw us off again. And we didn't quite know what that meant. And we were sort of all running around a bit mad, weren't we? But yeah, didn't happen for them. A couple of offside goals, which, it was difficult to watch at times.
Yeah. John, how do you feel about watching Poland for the last sort of 20 minutes or so? It wasn't clear whether the message had been communicated to the team or not. Definitely not to concede any more goals or get any more yellow cards. But they certainly stopped doing anything.
Well, it's sort of been the story of their World Cup so far, not looking particularly...
Not doing anything.
Yeah, which I suppose is fine if you consider yourself to be an underdog, but when you look at the team that they've got, they do have a fairly strong squad compared to a lot of other underdog teams. And obviously they have Robert Lewandowski, who is one of, if not the best number nine in the world. So I think for a lot of us, there's questions to be raised about their attitude to sort of being this sort of passive team, and why they think that that's the best way to play. But I mean, as Danny Murphy was saying throughout the BBC stream, he was very disappointed in how little industry they had in terms of trying to produce anything.
Yeah. Okay. I'm desperately upset to tell you all, well, Kiva, this won't really impact you, but I just noticed JJ Bull in the live chat, and I say live chat because if you're listening to this podcast, you can watch us doing it live on YouTube immediately after games. You can join us any game day to do that. But I've noticed JJ Bull is in the live chat. We were very excited before because he'd forgotten so far to send his predictions for points abad, but I've just checked my phone and he sent them. So he won't be incurring the penalty points, which would have leveled it out. We should have expected more.
Do you think he sends them late to cause a little bit more havoc?
Maybe.
Just to kind of fluster excited. You a little bit and unsettle the podcast
plan. It is
plan.
Working style, isn't
that
it?
That is JJ. Yeah. Classic is. JJ.
Well, speaking of working style, Argentina. They did need Messi today. I mean, absolutely fantastic save, the penalty save from Szczesny, but Messi was still brilliant, wasn't he?
He was, although obviously Joe, I was watching Saudi Arabia and Mexico, so this is probably a John question.
Should have been looking at John.
Yes.
Yeah, we saw similar stuff from Argentina. So we saw Messi on the board in front of me here. I've got Messi in the middle of a front three-ish. So they're pretty much playing a 4-4-2 diamond. We talked in the last game that they played against Mexico that a lot of what Argentina are trying to do is go through the middle to generate space to exploit through the middle. They pretty much keep everyone bar pretty much Di Maria. Then you've got the two fullbacks. They're the only players you're really getting width from. And we talked a lot in the last in the coverage of the last game about how Argentina were struggling to build up through the middle, and if they could find better ways of doing things other than relying on Messi. Obviously, Messi was, as you say, very good in this game. But I did notice an interesting thing that Argentina were doing out of possession, which actually made them a little bit more dangerous as a prospect attacking. So obviously, Poland play in a very conservative formation. So we've got them on the board here in a 4-4-2 mid block. And the reason why they would play like that is because if the opposition are trying to go through the middle, then they're just going to get as many bodies there as possible, compact things up, leave space in the wide areas, and say, you don't really have the sorts of players who are going to be dangerous from crosses. So we'll give you the wide areas. You can get into those wide areas and cross, but we reckon that our centre backs, Kamil Glick, for example, tall guy, we're going to have the advantages in those situations. So actually what I noticed was that in the build-up phase, so Poland building up out of a 4-4-2 as well. So let's just move everyone up. In the build-up phase, Argentina did something quite different to what most teams would do in that they put their wide players in the front line quite wide, sat Messi on one of the pivot players, and then went player for player with the remaining midfielders like this. And what this did was, sorry, the pedant in me is making everything correct. But let's say that the ball is with Kamil Glick now. So Kamil Glick's the right-sided centre-back. He's got the ball. The only option that is being shown to him really is, in this instance, Bielik. So the idea then is, look around my mic, to invite this pass into the midfield, stop the options out wide, and then press player for player in the middle. The idea being that if this pass comes in, you can counter-press quite quickly, win the ball back, and then you've got a much more open structure to attack from, rather than when you're in possession, when Poland are going to be much more narrow, much more compact, and much deeper. So I did notice that Argentina were trying to use the out-of-possession structure as a way of generating chances that would allow them to turn the ball over and be a little bit more dangerous in that way.
Yeah. I mean, it seemed to work for them. Every time I looked at the TV, Kiva, Argentina were attacking in one form or another. They still looked a little bit blunt in attack, but they certainly had the lion's share of the ball.
Yeah, they've got some great players, but I said to John, they just keep trying to pass to Messi, and then you said, wouldn't you? And I was kind of like, oh yeah, that makes sense. Sometimes I feel like that held them back in the first half, but then the second half they really got going, and they didn't stop trying to pass to Messi, because obviously you try and pass to Messi a lot, but other players came into it. McAllister obviously scoring a lovely goal, and then Julian Alvarez as well. I thought they could have scored more. I think they had, was it six big chances created, and they missed all of them. Obviously the penalty save as well, which was Szczesny is on fire at there, isn't he? That double save the other day, I'm still reeling off it. Best save of the tournament so far. Like, it's already won it. That's that's done. We don't need to talk about saves anymore.
Okay. We'll be sure to note that for future editions of the TV podcast. We were saying during the game, you have seen Messi play live, haven't you?
Yeah, twice. Once at Anfield and once many years ago in Barcelona. Yeah. I watched them pass.
I say once at Anfield, as though it wasn't the 4-1 win against Barcelona.
4-0. 4-0 win, sorry. Yeah. I was saying I'm in that picture of like Messi where he's got his hands on his hips and I'm like this tiny little face in the distance and the scoreboard's like above him. Probably should get that like printed out or something.
You should, with a sort of highlighter.
If anyone's watching
direction.
And wants to get me a Christmas present, that could be quite a nice one, couldn't it?
Seb, have you seen Messi live?
No.
No?
Never.
Do you want to? Presumably you could make that happen.
Well, it's actually quite conflicting because I'd want to see him live at Barcelona when he's about 28 years old.
Yeah.
So that you're not seeing, you know, when like...
I think that ship's passed, hasn't it?
Well, yeah, but you know when like you get a heavyweight fight between people who should have fought like 5 years ago and they're past their prime and you still want to see it, but once you've seen it, you think, I kind of wish it'd been earlier.
It's at moments like this where I regret that our perception of time is linear, hey Sam?
Yes, indeed. Mm. Yes, indeed. He's still a very, very good player, but I have kind of missed the boat in seeing him at his very, very best, I think. So,
but you could watch that advert where there's like all of the Messis.
That's true. Yeah. Multiple Messis in the advert. You've seen him.
I have. I went to see him last season. It was last season in the Champions League when PSG played against Man City and he had a fairly disappointing game, to be honest.
Sure.
I went to watch Messi and ended up watching Rodri and was much more impressed with him. But it was one of those, it's a bucket list moment, isn't it? Where you want to just be able to say, I saw him. But
it's exactly the kind of thing you would do.
That is bang on brand.
When I walked into the office earlier, France was on the big screen and John was huddled around the small TV watching Denmark, weren't you?
Sometimes I do that. Yeah, it's nice to concentrate on my
It's nice
job.
To concentrate, for sure. Yes. Listen, Argentina are through the group now. There we go. There was a wobble in the first game against Saudi Arabia. We did a poll. You weren't here last night, John, but we did a poll at the beginning in the live chat and asked people who they thought would win the World Cup. There were only four options and Argentina were the fourth. They got about 10% of the vote. Brazil had about 50%. And our contention is that is perhaps as a direct result of slipping up to Saudi Arabia, a game in which they did lose, but they really weren't as bad as people remember.
I think one of the most fascinating things about the World Cup is that you watch teams play very few games and you watch them play against teams of varying talent discrepancies, right? Mm. So Argentina lose to Saudi Arabia. And the question is, like, how indicative is that of anything? Is it going to be the case that actually against the good sides, Argentina are going to be good? And therefore, does that loss to Saudi Arabia actually not really portend anything? I don't think we have enough knowledge right now to know how they're going to look in those good games. So, and I suppose that's the joy of knockout football, right? Or tournament football, is that so much of what you're seeing is just a crapshoot in many respects. And that's sort of why it becomes so hard to judge where teams are at. So Argentina, we've seen that they've had problems with their build-up, their creativity. And I think they've shown in the last couple of games that they're dealing with those things better. So Enzo Fernandez came in today and was able to sit in the midfield a little bit better. And that meant that Messi didn't have to do all of the build-up, which is sort of what happened in the Mexico game. And I feel as though Argentina actually had more solutions in wide areas. So I've talked about how they don't have many wide players in their team. They play quite a narrow formation. But I felt today like they used Molina quite well. Obviously the goal itself, the first goal, from McAllister came from him cutting the ball back to the edge of the box. And then the second goal as well actually saw the ball go to Molina a couple of times. And then again, they played this pass from the corner of the byline of the box. How do you describe that area?
The corner of the byline of the box.
Yeah. I thought I was right.
18 yards away from the goal on the byline.
Yes.
Yeah.
And back towards the D. So long cutbacks, not the sorts of cutbacks that we expect, which you would think would go to the edge of the 6-yard box. This is right to the edge of the D. And we saw a couple of those in this game. And I think that's going to be, it just gives them a little bit more flexibility in terms of build up options.
Yeah.
So they are making progress in that respect. But the question is, how much is their problem? Is just a problem breaking down a low block rather than playing against a team who are going to be more expansive in attack?
Yeah, okay. Seb, let's talk about the other game briefly. Saudi Arabia, Mexico, both teams out. As we said already, Mexico out because they have more yellow cards. It'll be difficult for them to accept. What did you make of that game?
Well, first half was very, very competitive, and Saudi Arabia were kind of as advertised. They were physical in midfield. They passed the ball pretty well. They didn't really create anything, Joe. They didn't really threaten the Mexican goal. Everything seemed to change after the first goal. Mexico scored from a pretty rudimentary set piece, flick on, back post, goal, 1-0. And then things started to change a little bit. It started to open up. Obviously, Saudi Arabia then, you know, needed to take the initiative or needed to try to because they needed to score. And I think what worries me about Mexico, I mean, not worries me that much because they're out of the tournament now, so I don't, you know, need to worry on Mexico's behalf. But even after they had the game by the scruff of the neck, they didn't create a lot. They scored a second goal through, I think, what will become the goal of the tournament. Brilliant, brilliant Chavez free kick. It was one of those where probably about 30 yards out from goal, and he manages to get enough pace and whip on it that it's unstoppable. Mm. Even from that distance, which is quite amazing because when it's that far out, the goalkeeper isn't really unsighted. So you know how sometimes a free kick on the edge of the box, the wall is almost an aid for the attacking player because the goalkeeper can't see it until it's up and over the top of it, the highest player. And then by that time, it's too late to react. This one, if you look at the camera angle from behind the goal, the keeper sees it the whole way, yeah. And yet there's just nothing he can do about it.
The arc is extraordinary, isn't it?
Yeah, it is amazing. It's a brilliant free kick.
And he only takes shots from like 30 yards out. It's exactly he refuses to take them any closer.
It was his first goal for Mexico as well, which I, given how good he is at set pieces, I was I was surprised. Luis Chavez from Pachuca. I think that's how you pronounce it, Pachuca. Maybe. I'm sure that the chat will correct me.
I'm sure they will.
They've already corrected us on Chesney. So.
Yeah. How did we say Chesney?
I don't know how you say it. I think if you're pronouncing it, you're pronouncing it wrong. It's okay. One of those ones.
Okay. I think what we'll take, look, it's a disappointment for Mexico because they are under par in this tournament. They would have hoped to at least have got to the round of 16 and then broken their round of 16 curse after that. That's not going to happen. For the Saudis, I think they come out like in a really good place. They're not, obviously, they're eliminated, but I think it's the first time they would have got out of the group since 1994. And it's the first time that I've seen a Saudi Arabian team compete in the way that they have done in a World Cup group and in a strong, relatively strong World Cup group too. Because, okay, so there are deficiencies with Poland and Mexico, but at the same time, Mexico are full of good footballers, even if one of them isn't a number nine.
Yeah.
Poland have one of the best forwards in world football from the last decade.
And they have that guy at the back who looks like he's 45 years old.
Yes.
What's his name?
Kamal Glick.
And Argentina are Argentina. And in every game, they were competitive. In every game, they didn't just sit behind the ball. They were aggressive. They were assertive. There are some good footballers on that side too. And so they're enjoyable to watch. I think what ultimately cost them is a little bit of naivety around certain areas. Like, you can't do anything about the second Mexico goal tonight. It's just too good. The first, you can't concede that goal at a World Cup. It's the set piece. Like, it's kind of the default set piece routine setting. Like, if you go onto a Football Manager and you can't really be bothered to do all your set piece design and that kind of stuff, and you just go, right, we'll just do that one. It's kind of the near post flick, isn't it? With the back post runner. But, you know, they put in a really good account of themselves, so I'm sure they can be happy. Mexico, we've talked a lot about timing during this World Cup, about generations of players. They just didn't have the players in the right position.
Yeah.
Jimenez's pass is best. Chicharito is gone. Let's see what they've got in the next generation, I think.
We had a conversation halfway through this game, excuse me, about the progression of Asian teams in the World Cup. And then we looked at the history of it, Seb, and it turned out, I was surprised particularly by how often Japan specifically have made it to the round of 16, South Korea a couple of times as well. Obviously, both of those teams could still technically get through. I think in both cases, it's the less likely outcome.
Yes. Particularly for Japan, Joe, I think they've kind of.
In terms of teams that play within Asian competition, Australia are now the team confirmed through. Who will play, I don't know if you guys know this, will play Argentina, by the way, in the next round, which is very exciting. Looking forward to that game. But I guess with Saudi Arabia confirmed out, we're waiting for Japan or South Korea to see if there'll be representation.
Yeah, I don't know what to read from it, Joe. I think in a different situation, Japan should have beaten Costa Rica. I don't think that's particularly controversial. They are better player for player.
South Korea could have got more out of their games as well.
Absolutely. I think both should be through. And also, if you look at sort of the players that have been produced by both countries over the last 20 years, go back to sort of Nakata for Japan. it's not like they've been short of quality.
No.
And
well, this is the thing, they get out of the group more often than they don't. I mean, I think that's what surprised me about it, is like not having an encyclopedic knowledge of World Cup history. That if you're a Japan fan this week and they don't go through, that is a disappointment based on the last 20 years of history.
Yeah, because I think if you go back to, with Japan, if you go back to, for instance, 2010, that was a really good Japanese side in South Africa. I remember the game where they absolutely battered Denmark. That was the Akatsuki Honda game where he scored that sort of 35-yard free kick, which bent all over the place. And then they ended up losing in that tournament to Paraguay. And you thought that was quite disappointing because they were probably Paraguay's equal. And then you want to see a little bit of progress further forward. And I think one of the reasons why we all got excited about them initially is because in the first game, they showed this wonderful array of attacking players and variation that just dovetailed quite beautifully and was far too, well, not far too good for Germany, but was good enough to beat Germany and expose the weaknesses in their defense. Mm-hmm. And then the Costa Rica performance happened. And it feels like... it feels like you're right on the crest of something in terms of progress and something meaningful, like, and it just, they let slip a little bit. So that's disappointing. And also South Korea need to go through, really, because Song Heung-min will be 34 by the time the next World Cup comes around.
Is he 30 years old?
Yeah, he turned 30. He's either 29 or 30, but he will be past his physical best by then.
I think he's perennially 26.
He's been around for a very long time and he seems to have been at the same level for a very long time. Yeah. So you can understand that mind trick. He's also aged very well. Yeah. Well done.
Yeah.
But yeah, so to take advantage of a world-class player, you need to put him in the round of 16. But he's by no means the only one. That South Korean side is talented. So it's a shame that it will be a shame if they go out.
Sure.
Certainly.
Okay, well, having watched Argentina today, Kiva, who are, generally speaking, not just of all teams that play today, but who are your favourites for the tournament? John Hayson, when I asked this question, by the way, but I'm not asking you to predict who's going to win.
That's not what you asked me. I don't mind you asking about favourites.
Just to be clear, I'm not asking you to predict who will win, but I just want to know who you think might win.
Might win. I've got a feeling for Brazil, but I feel like everyone has.
Sure, hey, that's a pretty good feeling.
Spain, I think... Definitely one to watch. I mean, I just like watching Gavi and Pedri in midfield. I kind of just like certain players and want to watch our team because of them. Yeah. I think that's quite a normal thing.
Who else have we got on that list? You got Gavi and Pedri. I completely understand.
Rodri.
That. Rodri.
Imagine that. Gavi, Pedri, Rodri,
imagine
midfield.
Imagine watching Rodri.
You love Rodri.
I do love Rodri, yeah.
Do you love Henderson, though?
No.
No, he doesn't love Henderson, see?
That's sad. Sorry. I'm sorry about that.
What about Fabinho?
No.
Do you like any Liverpool players? Why don't you like Fabinho?
He's fine. I prefer Rodri.
So you're unmoved by Fabinho rather than you don't hate him?
I don't hate him. I don't hate many players, I don't think.
I mean, quite a lot of the Leeds ones.
That's different, isn't it? That's different. Liverpool players, yeah, they've got some good ones. Virgil van Dijk, he's all right, isn't he?
Yeah.
What do you reckon?
His first World Cup.
Is it his first?
First ever World Cup.
Is it?
His first major tournament. He's just never...
You're
never
kidding
happened
me.
Before.
Yeah, of course it is. Isn't
2010.
It? That seems ridiculous.
Because the Netherlands have had
failed
a bad
to
go.
Qualify.
And then he was injured when they did get to the Euros and he was meant to captain them and it was like literally a month out.
How old is he?
30.
Oh, wow. Talk about living through the wrong generation.
Tell you a Liverpool player who I love, Joel Matip.
Right.
What a great player he is.
Why is that?
Just a lot. I love a centre back who's really good at ball carrying.
Right.
And I think he's like both good at ball carrying, but in a sort of completely rogue way that most aren't.
Well, we all have our kinks, John McKenzie.
We do.
What can I say? Let's go to a break now. And when we come back, we will talk more about the other set of games that happened today.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Okay, what a lovely break. Tunisia, France. Did you watch this game, Keeper?
Did I watch this game? Was I still in the cupboard then? Or Tunisia, France?
It was Tunisia 1.
Tunisia 1-0.
The other game, of course, was Australia 1-0 Denmark. Was that your game?
I think I sort of watched a little bit of both. I mean, I was gutted for Tunisia in a way because you beat France. I know they made like 9 or /1 million changes. You beat France at a World Cup. You should be going through on that, surely. Sure.
And also, if you aren't going through, it's presumably not because Australia are, John.
What's the question?
I guess it was an odd way of phrasing it. I guess what I'm saying is Tunisia will have started that game against France, knowing they needed a win, but imagining that it wouldn't have been enough because Denmark might go through or because a draw in the other game would present issues. But I think the last thing they would have expected would be to finish the game and realise it's Australia going through in second and not Tunisia.
Yes.
Yes. Good stuff. How did Australia get through, John? Because we thought they were done for.
Are we talking about Australia now? Sorry,
that was the team in the question.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, Australia, the majority of whose compatriots seem to dislike me right now because I said they were amongst the worst teams in the competition.
And yet they have progressed.
They've gone through, which obviously disproves what I said.
Tournament football, hey?
Yeah, tournament
football. Fair dinkum, John. You are guilty as charged here.
Now, I have to say that Seb is being very smug about this one because for some reason he has become something of a minor celebrity in Australia. Somehow. And he's been riling the people of
John's
Australia up against me.
John's sassiness increases every day.
Every night. Every night. We take it up to a new level.
Yeah. So dog-eat-dog world, if you don't stand up for yourself on this podcast, then you burn and die.
Don't listen to him, Keeper.
Stand up for yourself. Don't let them get on top. But yeah, Australia have played the tournament really well. They've done what they've had to do. They have played really disciplined football. They've defended really well. They've counter-attacked really well. They've scored 3 goals in the tournament, and that's been enough to carry them through. They've done what they had to do with the players that they had. And that's, as you said before, tournament football, but you can only do what you can do, and that's what they have done. They've beaten today a very impressive Denmark side in previous tournaments, right? So a lot of people had Denmark as the dark horses for this World Cup, and they finished bottom of the group, I think. So, really impressive what they did. Denmark have a really dangerous set of attacking players, and Australia were able to keep them quiet today, score the goal when they needed to, and that was all they needed to get through the group. So, yeah, fine. Impressive.
Okay. Tell me about that goal, Seb.
Yeah, well, first, before we do that, I know what people are saying about Australia, and I know that in the round of 16, they face a really tough task.
Argentina.
It's really difficult not to be moved by what they've achieved, right? So you have
listen to him lap up the praise of Australian
honestly,
people,
because
John.
This is what
he
comes
loves
about.
His minor celebrity there, doesn't he?
I do.
Tell us more about why we should be so moved.
Just because it's a group of players who are entirely written off before the tournament starts, and not without reason, because they don't, from an individual basis, not John and,
not
and
by
JJ,
John.
Just
no,
by,
of course.
By all the
just
previews.
JJ, yeah.
Just JJ.
By everyone.
And yet they come together and they stand firm against all of that negativity, and they play, they don't just sit behind the ball and wait for their opportunities. They play good football. It's well constructed. And also, look at some of the scenes back in Australia. Like, look at some of the pictures we saw from Melbourne today.
Yeah.
Like at 3 a.m, whatever the time was when that game finished. Like, that is what a World Cup is supposed to be. And it's not like, okay, so the last couple of nights we spend our days moaning about Gareth Southgate this and play this player because he plays for my club and that player because he doesn't and that kind of stuff. And you just think, like, this is really great because you see the way in which it can, I dare say, and I'm sure these accounts will come out after the World Cup is finished, but like, it's how you bring new people into the game because you have a thing that people can bond over. And hey, do you remember that time we went down to wherever, Melbourne or Sydney or Canberra or whatever, and we watched the game, and you know, that's the essence of the game, right? And also to see what it meant to that group of players after the match, to the coaching staff, to the coach who has received a torrent of criticism.
Graham Arnold.
Yeah, including from ex-players, very high-profile ex-players. And not suggesting that, that criticism is undue. It's just that it's a hard job. If you're kind of doubted at every turn, and from what I've read, and I might be wrong in this, but from everything I've read, he's been going really on a result by result basis in terms of his reputation and his future with the Australian Football Association, certainly with the media, and so to see this happen against a very, very good Danish side, Denmark did nothing. Sure. This was not Matt Ryan playing the game of his life. It was a really, really strong collective performance. I did want to talk about the goals. So how about you give me 30 seconds to set up and then.
Well, that's good timing because, Kiva, I know you wanted to talk about Graham Arnold.
I really like him. Honestly, just there's not enough post-match interviews we get to see. We get to see like 30 seconds and it's just gold. Everything he says is brilliant. So I think after they beat Tunisia, he was like, all the lads down the pub, sort of in like his local, he sort of like shouted out to them, which I just, it was very grounding and humble and lovely. And then after the game today, he said, he was like, they had no celebrations and that's why they won against Tunisia. They didn't celebrate. So he was like, no celebrations, no emotions, no just sleep and no social media, which I think he's depriving us some Jackson Irvine content there on the gram and whatnot, because he is everyone's favourite footballer. And yeah, I really like this Australian team. The, like Seb mentioned there, that them stories that you can just fall in love with. And like Harry Souter, my new favourite player, can do it for Stoke and he's doing it for Australia at the World Cup. He's going to play against Messi and he could keep Messi. Let's not talk about pockets here, but he could keep Messi quiet or he might not. Let's see what happens.
Okay, Seb, don't talk about pockets though.
I will not. I'm glad Kiva mentioned Harry Souter because the move starts with him. So some of the players are not in their right positions. I'm just kind of trying to give an idea of shape. So I've arranged the board in the position with players in the position ahead of the move, which results in the only goal of the game. So Harry Souter makes a block, and I think I've got the ball at his feet. And I think in a lot of situations like this, when you're under pressure, the temptation is kind of just to do that, right? Or to hit a channel and hope someone can run onto it and force a turnover. But if you watch the move, it's actually a really good bit of football. And we talked about this. We talked about how like, the moment after the clearance is super important and what the player on the ball is willing to do. So Souter takes a touch, plays it out to about here. Mitch Duke comes out to receive the ball. And because he does that, because he plays a pass forward, he takes, I'd have to watch it back again or see the screenshot, but it's about three players who are just taken out of the game immediately. And then, right, my defender's here and not actually in the right position, but I'm just kind of organizing them in a sort of random shape. Duke then, instead of just kind of taking a foul, potentially back into the defender and winning a cheap free kick from the referee, plays a ball out to in this direction. And for those who are listening, it's just a right to left pass for about 10, 15 yards. Jackson Irvine, who I'm a massive fan of the person as well as the player, you know, just a great example he sets in football, I think, steps over the pass, doesn't just panic, hack it anywhere. Again, like Jude, doesn't just try and win a free kick or get the ball off the pitch. Steps over the ball. And that's the kind of the moment which gives McGree the room to move into. So he's just ahead of the halfway line here. And it's a kind of, I think it's a 3-on-3 rather than a 3-on-4. But also the other thing to look at, and this is about sort of instruction, and this is kind of another little example of why I've been moved by Australia. Matthew Lecky runs probably about 90 yards before he scores, and he gets to sort of, I've got him just outside the Danish penalty box. During the game, John and I were having a conversation about teams who counterattack, and John was schooling me all kinds of tactical bits. But like one of the things that's frustrated me about teams who've counterattacked in this tournament is that when they do it, and when they have like a 2-on-2 or a 3-on-3, they feel the compulsion to do everything as quickly as possible. Last pass, quick as possible. Cross, quickly as possible. Don't think about it. Don't try and build a phase. Just get the ball forward quickly as possible. Whereas at the moment when it matters most, Lecky cuts his defender inside, outside, produces the angle, scores. And it's a brilliant finish.
Yeah.
It's a really, really good bit of football. Like, and so, yeah, they're defensive because like, they lack kind of individual star power to be anything other than that. At the same time, when they're exiting, when they're coming out of defense, that actually produced some pretty well put together phases. And that's what counted, because if with a goalless draw, Australia are out because Tunisia beat France. and they needed to win this game, and they got the reward for something that they've actually done quite well throughout the tournament, even just in small bursts.
Yeah. Okay, John McKenzie, we know you hate Australia with a passion, but you love Denmark, and for me, so far in the group stages, the biggest surprise, I think, of the whole tournament is that Denmark end this group with 1 point. They lost the first two games, they've drawn this game here, and it felt all the way through, because we know the quality they have in their team, and we know that they play Australia last. The assumption is always the first result doesn't go your way, fine, maybe you get something out of the second game, second one doesn't go your way, but you're gonna win the last game, so you'll still sneak through. They just never really kicked into gear. I mean, it's been a huge disappointment, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. Can I just say, what a disgusting mess he left on the...
Sepp Staffelblom.
On the board.
Yeah.
Just no attempt.
Disgusting mess Australia made of your predictions.
Why don't you answer my question, and then Seb can sort out the mess that he made.
Yeah, that's fair.
What do you think about that?
Yeah, well, I wanted to talk a little bit about the disappointment in terms of what Denmark didn't do against the Australian bloc. We've talked a lot about 4-4-2. Now he's broken the board. You were right in your sensibilities to not let him.
Is it always like this?
Yes.
He's good if he's holding a book.
Chaos. You know?
Seb's a very old sort of guy with books.
I need props, Kiva. I need also sort of less responsibility for things. And I need one task at a time.
He flooded my bathroom the other day.
I cleaned it up though afterwards.
I didn't say you didn't clean up after yourself.
I came into the office and I said, I've got good news and bad news. The good news is I have cleaned up the flood in the bathroom. The bad news is irrelevant beyond that point.
Sure, there was a flood.
No,
and there was also a flood in the bathroom of Denmark's World Cup group stage.
That's right, yeah. So we've already talked about how 4-4-2 mid-blocks are quite popular in this World Cup because it's a quite simple way of setting up. You've got your two banks of four, so you've got four defenders, four midfielders, and then two strikers in front of that. And it's just a really nice way of playing. You can get quite compact, so what you'll see is that you'll often see the back four within the lines of the penalty area. And what you're doing is, as we said when we talked in the last section, is just allowing teams to get certain amounts of joy in the wide spaces. You'll let them play it around the back, force them wide, and then make it hard work for them to really generate any really dangerous situations. And so it seems surprising to me that a team like Denmark can come in and then struggle to have any kind of visible ideas about how they're going to break down these sorts of blocks. So I just wanted to show what you would normally do in these sorts of situations. So Denmark have a front three of Brathwaite, Lindstrom and Skov Olsen, and they use these in pretty much wide areas, right? So you stick your centre forward in between the two centre backs and you call that pinning. So what you're going to try and do is generate as much space as possible or force the centre backs deeper, generate space around the D, so just in between the lines of the defence. And then the two other wide players are going to then pin on the other axis. So you're going to try and pull the defence apart as much as possible.
Yeah.
And what people may have noticed from this game is that both Skov Olsen and Lindstrom had a huge amount of space on either side. So let's say the ball is over on the left-hand side here. You'll see the Australian team pull across over on the left side.
They all come together.
Yes, so it's very compact.
So they sort of move as a compact block.
That's right. Mm. And now a lot of people will say, you know, just pass the ball across the field.
Switch it.
Switch the play.
Yeah, yes. That's what they say in football, isn't it?
Mm. Yes. Yeah. And
look at me go.
Obviously, a lot of football teams play in this way. What we often call this is marking in advance. So the idea being that the amount of time that it takes the ball to go from one side of the pitch to the player on the other side of the pitch, the opposition can then shift across in that time, and then your block gets to the other side.
It's funny that, isn't it? Because do you remember in the film Goal, where they do that whole bit where they say, if you pass the ball, it moves quicker than if you run with it. But it doesn't always, does it? Depends how hard you kick it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So, no, you're absolutely right for once. But I think the big trick here is that the mid-block press that Australia were playing was quite an aggressive one. So they've got their two forwards just located around the pivot player here. So that's Højbjerg for Denmark. What's going to happen is if the ball is on this side, then this striker, the ball side striker, so the striker nearest the ball, is going to push out, put this centre back under pressure. And what that means is that the other striker then will drop in, make sure that there's no pass going to the pivot player. And that's just going to be a concertina effect. So if the ball's over here, that will happen on that side. So they've been quite aggressive. They're making sure that this pivot player isn't free because they've only got two midfielders against two opposition midfielders. So you have to be careful to
the strikers work as a pair to keep Højbjerg out of the game.
Basically, and then usually what will happen is you're trying to force the ball into the fullback. So by doing this, what you're doing with your striker is essentially you're going to try and close off the pass to the other centre-back as well. Mm. So you're going to force the ball into this wide area. Now, at this point, this will trigger a press. So usually the wide player for Australia on the ball side is going to come across now to the fullback here. And the big question is how are you going to generate space in this sort of area? Because what you're trying to do is you're trying to pull this fullback out of position, the ball side fullback, and then get one of your players in. So Denmark spent the whole time trying to get Lindstrom and Skov Olsen into favourable positions in these wide areas. Yeah. And I just didn't think that they did a particularly good job of that, because what you're wanting to do in these situations is pull this player out. Obviously, if it's an aggressive press, you know that the Australia players are going to go player for player. And so usually what you'll see, a couple of options that you have, one of them is for this, the wide player here, so Lindstrom, to pull closer to Mähler and then pull this player out. Now,
what you're showing here on the board is Australia's fullbacks being sort of dragged up the pitch towards the ball and then leaving space in behind them.
Yeah. And the idea then is you're generating space for these sorts of passes now. So Mähler could play the pass here to Eriksen. Mm. Eriksen could play a bounce pass into this area. And then Lindstrom, having dropped deep, can now run into the space that he's created to pick the ball up in this sort of area.
A turn of pace there.
Yeah, exactly. So there's plenty of different options that you have to sort of develop space in these sorts of wide areas.
Do you know like those little games that the very boring games you get out of Christmas crackers sometimes with 9 tiles on, with one tile free, where you have to shift them all around and you can only move one at a time in order to make the picture?
Like a Primark Rubik's Cube.
This is kind of what we're seeing here, and the aim is to get Australia's fullback out of position. It would be a more fun Christmas present.
Yeah, and so I felt as though throughout the whole game there was options for them to try and generate space, but Denmark really weren't able to exploit this sort of stuff. And I think when you have players of the caliber of Christian Eriksen, who can, you know, he can pick the ball up in this sort of pocket that's been generated by movement, and then he can play the ball into the wide area. He can get the ball into zone 14, as a lot of coaches call it, just around the D, as you might call it more colloquially. And then you've got different options that you can play. I just felt as though they didn't really make Australia work hard enough in terms of knowing that because they were playing an aggressive, fairly player-to-player press when the ball was around them, they just weren't generating space enough for their teammates to then exploit. So in that respect, I feel as though Australia deserved to win the game because Denmark had the ability to caused them problems and they just didn't.
For sure, Zone 14 sounds like a teen's laser tag centre.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's
going down Zone 14 on a Friday night.
Going to have a Diet Coke.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that
and,
sort of
and
thing.
Like a, what are those sort of those drinks called that you used to get at ice rings, like slushies?
Oh, slushies. Slush puppies.
They gave you the brain freeze.
They slush puppies or am I getting confused between hush puppies? Are they shoes?
You have proved you're younger than me. Well done.
Shoes? I never understood that you go ice skating and get a really cold drink.
You haven't,
It doesn't really make any sense.
It seems like there's a kind of disconnect in the thought there, doesn't it?
Yeah. You probably want a warm drink.
Yeah.
Having said that, though, I do prefer a cold drink.
But you wouldn't, Kiva's right, you wouldn't go to a beach and have a hot tea. Well, you might, but probably not. If you went to a sauna, you wouldn't think, that's lovely, I want a coffee.
But I guess the difference is that the ice rink is presumably in an area where there isn't naturally occurring ice. Because otherwise you'd just go on the ice.
But the ice rink itself is really cold. Like, obviously...
Is it? You
know, yeah, being in the ice rink is cold.
Is it? Or is just the floor cold?
No.
I think it's all cold.
It's all colder than ice rink.
Yeah. Have you never been to an ice rink?
I have been to an ice rink.
How do they keep it cold at the outside ice rink at Somerset House?
It's winter. Thank you.
Yeah, but it's not always like below
zero. That was such a stupid phrase that you prompted one of the producers
One of the producers shouted, "It's winter at me." Yeah. It's not all. Anyway, this is boring, isn't it?
Can we go to the ice rink at Somerset House?
Can we? No, I look silly on the ice. You can imagine. I'm not graceful. 45 minutes in, maybe, but you know.
I'd like one of these boards, but just a whole ice rink.
Yeah,
because you should do that.
Yeah,
it would kind of be cool. Well, let's continue the conversation about how ice is made later. I want to hear more about Tunisia, because did we already talk about them? No, I want to hear about France now. That's right. Because France changed almost their entire team, Seb.
Well, again, Joe, for the second time in the podcast, of course, I was watching the other game. So this is a question for Kiva rather than for me.
Whoops.
Yeah.
Hi, Kiva.
Was I watching France?
Who was watching France? Was it you?
Yeah, I think
I watched. Back on me again. I get it. I'd have to do all the boring shit.
I watched a bit of France, actually, but in the pub. So
I feel like it would be an oversight not to say that Tunisia were pretty hard done by.
Well.
Because, okay, first of all, like, they've never reached the knockout rounds in a World Cup. This is their sixth tournament. They've had a bit of a fallow period of the past decade. They won the AFCON in 2004 under Roger Lemaire. And they had a chance to reach the knockout stages by beating France. And, you know, obviously they've had independence for just over 60 years now from France. And sort of what a moment in the country's history that would have been.
In the company's history.
In the company's history, yeah. Subscribe to The Athletic.
Yes. Tunisia PLC.
Yeah, exactly. And and it's very cruel the way they were denied because they played, I watched this game sort of on and off over my shoulder, but they seemed to play very well. All the chances that were covered on the highlights, nearly all of them fell to Tunisia.
Yeah.
And yeah, pretty cruel. And you could see actually, there was a moment at the end where the Antoine Griezmann goal was disallowed. So it went to a VAR referral and it was disallowed. And when it's disallowed, you could see that a lot of the Tunisian fans in the crowd didn't know the score in the other game.
Yeah.
And they thought they were through.
That was,
and
it was quite heartbreaking to
it
watch.
Sorry, we watched
I did see
together.
That bit.
Yeah. Yeah. It was.
She saw the goal getting disallowed. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not the goals. Just the
I missed a lot of things. Yeah. I was interested that France made this many changes. Obviously, they're already through, but I was thinking to the summer and obviously Serena Weigman, and she didn't make any changes on the way to the Euros final of England. That is quite rare in a tournament. Mm. I think it does happen, but it did surprise me a little bit. Obviously, there's that fear of players getting injured. Kylian Mbappe comes on at the end anyway, so obviously they were going to try not to lose the game. But it is interesting how you play that. Like, I'm glad I'm not a manager because what do? You give all the lads on the bench who haven't had a game? And then that's obviously what he's done and they've lost the game. How does that impact their morale now? Obviously, they're all happy they played, but they lost. And then
Do you think it's the privilege that you earn by winning your first two games?
I think so. It's rest, isn't it? Clearly.
Yeah.
But do you not just want to keep that side together? Because they didn't have hardly any time in the build-up.
I mean, it was fairly extreme because Camavinga played left-back, John.
That was weird.
And as far as I'm aware, Camavinga, not a left-back.
Yeah, he's not. I don't think he's ever played as a left-back for.
I don't doubt that he could do it.
Yeah,
but no, I've just never seen it before.
And they did use him sort of quite inverted at times, so maybe that was the thinking behind it. But I'm with Kiva. I don't really get what material benefit do you get from completely change. So Tchouaméni is the only player, I think, who's played in the other two games.
Mm.
I think Konaté played in the first game. Is that right?
I think he might have come on in the second as well.
Did he play in both? I have a feeling that they mixed the centre-backs up a little bit in between the two games. Either way, it's no more than two players, maybe three who have been kept on in this game. And I don't get what the benefit is. Like you say, the only positive you get really is rest. But I think at this sort of point, I think that what you're talking about, the sort of more socio-effective aspects of the game are going to be more important. This is a group of players who don't usually play together. The team that is starting in this tournament is quite different from the teams that started in qualifying. The structure is different. Surely the benefits that you get from playing the starting 11s or close to the starting 11s, bar players who you're worried about with respect to injury, like if you play those players together, you're getting a benefit that outweighs the ability to rest your team. Especially when you're playing, as you said, a player like Camavinga as a left back anyway.
Yeah.
You know, you're playing Camavinga as a left back because your first left back is injured.
I mean, it's a difficult one though, isn't it? Because I suppose like it's obvious the upside of resting players, they avoid injury, right? And coaches can be criticized for playing a player in a game that isn't required if they end up with an injury. It's very clear to see the scenario in which that would there would be a downside to that. It's harder to evaluate the upsides of resting players because it's not as obvious, but presumably coaches do it. They must see a value in doing that.
Do you think also, Joe, that this is a kind of squad dynamics and involvement situation too? Because like this is a French team who they've lost Pogba, they lost Kante, they lost Benzema. So they've already had to accommodate players who perhaps ahead of the World Cup didn't think they'd be starting.
Yeah.
So what happens if they need Randall Kolasinac to start a game or to come in and actually be a difference maker?
That's what I mean. I meant to say they must see a value in keeping players playing as opposed to resting
because
them.
Like anytime you see like when tournaments go wrong or when tours go wrong or whatever, like one of the things that you sometimes see is this element of disenfranchisement amongst players who firstly aren't playing but also feel like they're not even given the chance to play.
Yeah.
And you can't have that. You can't have a kind of a group of people sitting at the back of the bus. That's probably not how the French bus works to and from games, but people who just feel right, I'm just a cheerleader here. Like, yeah. I'm not actually part of this. And so mentally, if you feel that way, are you going to be training properly? Are you going to be preparing tactically properly? Are you going to be looking after yourself physically, sleeping, you know, following instructions around, right, don't use your iPad to like look at YouTube after two in the morning?
Well, even the inverse of that, perhaps, you know, we don't know. What if there are players who sit on the bench for France who are kind of knocking on the manager's door and saying, I think I should start, put them on for a game, they lose to Tunisia. Like they don't knock again for the rest of the tournament, you know? Maybe it's a squad harmony thing, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a very famous example of this. So if people Google the Dirassu documentary, he was a player who played for AC Milan, actually, as a midfielder, good player. He went, I think it was to the 98 World Cup or the 2000 European Championship. And he was kind of just a little bit of an outcast in his own squad. And he made a very good documentary about it. And that's kind of, I suppose that's woven into the French psyche. I don't know. I can't speak for them, but it's something that happens. You have to make players feel like they're involved and important some way. And where better to do that than in a game that you're already qualified for? And I get the dynamics issue that John and Kiva bring up, but it's like, it's a necessary part of World Cup campaigning, I think.
I think a big part of a manager's job though is to be able to achieve that without having to feel burdened to play your players. And I think that's a really important dynamic to bring across in these sorts of tournaments, to make everyone feel as though they're a part of the same team, even if they know that they're a peripheral piece. I've worked in coaching myself a little bit, and I was coaching in the university system, and we would drive 2-3 hours to a game, and you're taking someone who won't be played because there's only so many substitutions you can make. And obviously this is like a really sort of peripheral anecdote, but we found the best way of dealing with that was by making everyone who is involved aware of the fact that they were an important part of the team, even if they didn't play, because being part of the team was about much more than just the actual games themselves as well. But maybe that's my bias in this respect, but I do feel like clearly what's happened here is that he has felt we can get everyone in the squad playing in a game. And that's all right because we've won the two games.
Well, and also people will overreact, Kiva, to a loss, as they do whenever England play. We talked about this earlier in the week. We talked about it at the Euros last summer when England lost to Scotland. You wouldn't be surprised at all if, I mean, France just forget about it and move on to play Poland, who they're going to meet in the next round.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what their sort of papers are saying tomorrow and, you know, how they react to it. Because I think I've seen Mbappe posting on Instagram or something, and it didn't seem like, you know, it was just a picture from, I think, him sat on the bench and that kind of thing. So I don't think, you know, they will be too, obviously they'd be bothered. There's pride at stake here. They don't want to lose at the World Cup. I think the last time they lost at the World Cup was 2014. So obviously they won the last one, and, you know, they are reigning champions, but I think they'll just dust this off. I don't think they'll be too fussed. They won't take it in to the next game. But then if somehow they don't end up winning the World Cup, will they look back on this moment and think, did that sort of shift momentum a little bit? Did it sort of disrupt things because they've looked so good in those games? And then obviously they lose to Tunisia and all of them changes. I do wonder how that sort of pans out now for them. If they don't win the World Cup, I think they will look back at this moment maybe, but what do I know?
Sure.
I don't think it has like a negative effect. I just think that, that you can get more benefits from just playing your usual starting 11 and make changes for players who do need a rest, but try and keep the core the same. I think
yeah.
I think they'll be fine going forwards. I don't think it's going to derail them in any way.
I think someone like Olivier Giroud would have benefited from a rest. So you could probably go through the list and pick out players like, you know, he might score a hat-trick in the next game. And it's like, well, that rest did him good. So I guess we're kind of just waiting to see what happens next.
Yeah. Before we move on, I need to point out that I said lost to Scotland when, of course, the result was 0-0. But let's face it, that is a loss, isn't it? Yeah. Let's have another break now. And when we come back, I'll diss more different nations for no reason other than, being self-conscious about a mistake I made.
Narrow-minded parochialism.
That's right. Watch out, other countries. If I'm feeling upset, maybe I'll come after you.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Okay, we're back from that delightful break. I've calmed down now. Kiva, let's talk about Darwin Nunez, because there seems to be, you know, no reason to not do that. You're here.
Yes.
What do you think about him?
I mean, I really like him.
Mm. He's your favourite player of all time?
Ever. In the history of football.
Yeah.
Goodbye. No, he's an interesting player because every time I watch him, he does magnificent things I've never seen a footballer do. But that is in a good way and a bad way sometimes as well.
Yeah.
I feel like for Uruguay, he isn't getting that service. They're in a sort of weird phase between like the legends of the game for them and the youth and experience come. Like that blend is quite a little bit, you know, I don't know. It just feels like you've got players like Darwin Nunez there, and then you've got like the likes of Suarez, Cavani. It's like this sort of old school. Diego Godin still there, Sebastian Quartas, he popped up the other day and was playing for them. Like, it's interesting to see that sort of old guard is still there. It feels like maybe probably a lot of last World Cups for a lot of those players. And then you've got players like Darwin Nunez, Valverde, Bentancur, like these really exciting players. So it feels like for Uruguay, they're at this sort of just changing of the guard, I guess, the old guard and meets the new. But Darwin Nunez, I think he's chaos, but Liverpool fans keep calling him chaos because he is chaos to watch. And, you know, he scored plenty of goals this season. I think he will continue to do that.
Do you think he hasn't scored
at the World Cup yet.
No, but because Haaland arrived at Manchester City at the same time, do you think there's kind of been some, not necessarily unfair comparisons, because two leading teams in the league buying new strikers at the same time, that I think it's fair to draw a comparison between the two. But you think, therefore, that Darwin Nunez has been unfairly perceived?
I mean, Erling Haaland's on a level of his own. It's only really him and Kylian Mbappe. They're just up there now, aren't they, together, fighting it out to be the best. And obviously Darwin Nunez wants to be there. I feel like every time he does something, does something bad, it kind of gets clipped up and thrown on Twitter by someone, and then it gets, you know, goes viral. And that was happening quite a lot. It doesn't seem to happen as much for his goals, but then you've got like these people who are like sharing his goals and being like, look how great he is, and then these people are like, look how bad he is. I think it's really quite unhealthy actually to see. It happens quite a lot. But yeah, I think he's doing all right. I just think a World Cup goal would be good for him. And I mean, what a game. It might be the game of the tournament, Uruguay, Ghana. It's going to be just so interesting with all the history there. Okay. Ghana looking for revenge. Uruguay obviously trying to go through. I just think it's going to be so interesting to watch that game and see how it plays out and see if Darwin Nunez can score at the World Cup, because, you know, that'll definitely be clipped up.
Of course, Kiva, I completely forgot, but Kiva's referring to the Luis Suarez incident.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, Rashi, would you, if you were...
Can you remind listeners what it was?
Yeah, so it's the 2010 World Cup when right at the end of extra time, Luis Suarez punches a goal bound shot, a goal bound header over the bar, takes the red card, and then Asamoah Gyan misses the penalty.
Yeah.
Uruguay then go and win on penalties. If you were Uruguay, would you start Luis Suarez? It's because you've watched him probably more than most of us. Like
in goal.
But like, this just seems to be two sides to it. Like you kind of like, you feel like playing him riles up Ghana because the appetite for revenge must be absolutely huge. Understandably so. But then also from what I've seen of him this tournament, it feels like Uruguay are a better side without him.
Yeah, well, they started Cavani ahead of him against Portugal. Yeah. That obviously didn't work out well for them. They lost 2-0. But I do think that made me think, were they kind of like saving his legs for this game somehow? Because they think he's going to be able to have that impact. You know, we've seen his sort of decline over the past couple of years. Obviously, he won that La Liga title with Atletico Madrid. It feels like that was sort of the squeezing the last sort of best out of his football. But, you know, he's still there for a mad moment. And I'm sure, you know, playing him would be interesting, and it's something that Uruguay might look to do, given that they did rest him in the last game. I think he come on as well against Portugal. But yeah, I feel like, will he not look to those younger players for more of that energy? He likes Darwin Núñez, but it's going to be interesting to see what Uruguay do and go with. Obviously, that game's on Friday, but I don't even know what day it is anymore. It feels like I'm lost now.
One world, lost to time. Long World Cup day.
It's day 11.
Is it?
That's what I know.
Yeah.
Ooh, John, can I ask you a question? Yes. It's going to sound like a stupid question, but it's a serious question. I'm an unfit guy, right? So I don't have fitness. I don't know what it is to
fitness
run.
Fitness zero.
To is run a fitness saying? Zero. And if I was in Football Manager, I'd break the game. I don't know what it is to run free. You know? So I haven't noticed losing my energy as I've aged because I didn't ever have any. Zero to zero, it's all fine. But you're a sprightly man, well, you know, a football player. You've got, you know, legs made out of ancient oak wood trees. But you've mentioned to me a couple of times that now you're in, you're in the sort of...
The twilight of my years.
The twilight of your 30s, let's say, that you don't have the energy. JJ said this to me too as well. You don't have the energy to keep up with the younger people anymore. There they are running around with their fresh lungs. I honestly don't know what that's like. And I wonder if there are other obese people listening that also wouldn't know. But tell me what that's like, because it must be devastating.
That's an interesting angle for us to go, yeah. But yeah. So as I mentioned, I was involved in the university system for quite a period of time. I played for the first team at my university when I was there. So playing to an okay amateur level. And one of the things I had was just insatiable stamina and fitness.
Abundance of energy, yeah.
And I hit 33 and it became harder and harder to do things.
I guess
two things happen. One is that you lose a little bit of your agility and your athleticism sort of drops. this is tragic.
No, I'm curious.
So you can't do the things that you used to be able to do physically, right. but also obviously your stamina drops as well, and it becomes
you can't do those things for as long.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
So yeah, that's where you find me, a burnt out husk of a man.
Right. Okay. And what in your late 30s, did you notice it? You said when you turned 30, because when we talk about basically the reason I say this is because we talk about footballers all the time when they turn 30 as though, you know, they're about to drop into a grave. I mean, that's, you know, I sort of don't really understand.
Yeah, if you're a footballer who relies on your athleticism, then your game changes. I think I would say maybe around the 32, 33 for me was when it happened.
Right.
And yeah, you have to sort of reinvent what it is that you can do. But a lot of the players who play with more longevity, so someone like Luka Modric is a good example of that, right? He's played for a long time, but he has a level of athleticism that I think is allows him to be a little bit more naturally fit, but he also is a very highly technical player, and your technique sort of stays a little bit longer. So players who are relying on particular athleticism will probably drop off. So like Wayne Rooney was quite an athletic player when he was when he was at his peak, and that dropped off quickly, and it felt as though as soon as that hit, he dropped off. Yeah. Whereas someone like Cristiano Ronaldo is the opposite, where he's really on top of his physique.
It's funny when you said, 32, 33, because I don't know if you remember this also, Seb, but John, you described it like in the same way that I imagine like people having a growth spurt when they're 11 or something, like suddenly growing 4 inches in one summer. Has it happened to you, Seb?
The growth spurt? No. The aging?
You just wanted to pull all of us down, is that
No, I'm just curious. Have you lost that foot of pace, whatever they say?
No, I played a lot of football in my late teens and early 20s and had a succession of back injuries and
knee problems. You were an excellent goalkeeper, I hear.
I was fine. I was okay. But I also, so from quite a young age, I had sort of pain and I don't know, I didn't play much beyond that. So I accepted that my days were numbered in the amateur football world from probably about 23, 24 onwards. Mm. So I got ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
So no, I didn't notice it. I do notice now, when I've been sitting down for quite a while, if I get up, I've got a pain in the front of my knees.
Yeah
that feels great. So yeah. I've gone from... It's not like I've gone from pace 18 to 14. I've gone from like agility 4 to 1.
Yeah.
Youth is wasted on the young.
Well, I was going to say, yes, Kiva, what about you? Do you have any aches from being sedentary?
I'm still in my 20s.
Still in your 20s.
Who invited her?
Doing ultra marathons.
Get out. Yeah. Get out. You experienced aging in any way?
No.
What is your experience of aging, Kiva?
I think I'm good.
What about you, Joe? I feel as though you don't feel any different than you did 10 years ago.
Oh, I feel not a day over 13. No, I feel I put my back out once a year, let's say, and then I can't stand up straight for a week. But it's sort of fine, And I keep thinking, I should see someone about that. But then it gets better.
I mean, I haven't actually. I did lie there. I have experienced aging. I started playing football again recently for the first time in like 15 years.
Yeah.
I just haven't kicked a ball in that long with Sefton Park Rangers in Liverpool. And honestly, I just was like, how do people run around the pitch? Like, I'm writing about these people all the time. How do they just run around for that long?
Mm.
I wish I would have done it sooner just to be like,
to remember.
Good on you.
It's kicking the ball as well. I played foot golf with JJ a year ago and I still haven't forgotten that, honestly, don't laugh at me, John, but for a week, my thigh on my kicking leg, I swear it was broken. My thigh, it hurt every day I woke up just from kicking the ball. And it was 18 holes, it was about 36 kicks, two kicks every year. I lost that one. But, you say running around, but even just kicking the thing. Anyway, now this podcast has descended into me describing how bad my body is.
To get us back on track, so the chat reminds me that the Vikash Dorisood documentary was 2006, quite right, as well. But then this sort of proves the point, beyond a certain age, time just passes, right? It doesn't, get no sense of when stuff happened.
Time passes.
Yeah. We don't know what day it is anymore.
No.
There you go.
No.
Points are bad and aging is bad.
Nasty points are bad, I think.
And I brought cupcakes to this and it's all descended into real sadness.
He had his cupcakes too early.
I had it too early.
He had them too early.
There are more out there.
I had it 4 hours ago. I should have eaten one just before we started. Anyway, never mind. Seb, what changes are FIFA proposing for 2026? That seems like an easy tangent.
Very strange one, Joe. So Adam Crofton for The Athletic this morning reported that there is a discussion afoot about potentially introducing penalty shootouts after group games. From 2026 onwards as a way of awarding bonus points for drawn games. Now, I'm against that. What I'm really against is any suggestion that should happen before a game takes place. Can't have that.
Yeah.
We were talking about that earlier, Kiva. That offends me, actually, the idea of...
What, a penalty shootout taking place before a game begins?
Before a World Cup group game. Yeah. It's just silliness.
Just doesn't make any sense. Do those MLS
running 90s... Penalties.
The run-up ones.
Yeah, like hockey.
Yeah,
I think we should bring them in. I don't know why that hasn't happened sooner.
Before the game, so that it prompts one team to try harder because they know that if it's a draw, they're going to...
Yeah, because you've also got three team groups from 2026.
Oh, it's going to be such a bad idea, isn't it?
Yeah, the old 48.
That means that you're going to have the final game of the group with the teams knowing what they need to do, which seems unfair for the team who isn't playing, right?
Yes.
They do this in the Conti Cup. Watch Liverpool women do a few penalty shootout after the game, but there's never really not one in it because if teams have drawn, they've already got a point and then it's like a bonus point. So I guess it's like this little moral victory, but they also do it in the Papa John's, the old pizza trophy. I think they do it there.
But don't you feel also that like penalties is such a fundamental part of knockout games in the World Cup football? Like it's what you, like it's kind of the crescendo of the drama. It's the ultimate tension. If you start introducing them in group games, like functionally, like I understand the need to kind of to differentiate and to kind of prevent some of the issues that may develop. But at the same time, like at the cost of, I don't know, like you don't want to see penalties too often.
Can I say something as well? I feel as though penalty alternatives to penalties, i.e. Games being drawn and going to penalties as a decider, does need to be found because I'm so sick of penalties in games.
Yeah,
I don't care about penalties. I feel like there are very few stakes anymore. Whereas if a game were tied at 120 minutes and you were going to a decider, something akin to penalties, but as Kiva suggests, for example, it's the MLS run-up style thing or it's something else that had real jeopardy.
Drawing lots.
That was actually special. Drawing lots. Flipping a coin. Something that was special that didn't happen. Well, I mean, you probably don't know this off the top of your head, but how many penalties are there per 90 awarded in the Premier League, for example?
0.94.
Really? So it's virtually one a game.
I made that up.
Okay, but it doesn't sound that wrong, right?
Yeah, that's all it requires. Let's assume it is.
You said it with real confidence.
Yeah, I did.
We'd be one person in the chat who would have proved that wrong, but nobody would listen to them. It would have been fine. It does feel like there's one a game or one every other game, and they're extremely dull. So if you saved those moments after 120 minutes of something special, I would enjoy that. Anyway, listen, we have to move on to points are bad now. Let's all put our headphones on. Kiva, have you got headphones?
I've got headphones. I brought cupcakes and I get headphones in return.
You'll want to put the headphones on to hear this lovely song. Feel free to dance if you wish. You don't have to. There's no rule about that here. But producer Jamie, key us in with points are bad.
Fire her up, Jamie.
Oh, yeah.
Points are bad.
There we go. Wasn't that fun? Maybe that's why all the headphones break. If I throw them on the floor like that. Could be, couldn't it? Anyway, who cares about headphones? It's time to play Points Are Bad. Sadly, as discussed at the beginning of the podcast, JJ did get his predictions in time, so we're not going to have as much fun today as we thought. But let me tell you, Sebastian Stafford-Blore, I want to see a big beaming smile on your face. And let's cut to Seb there so we can all see him enjoy this moment. You are today's winner with an incredible score of only 5 added points. Round of applause for Seb there.
5 from 4 games is impressive. 5 from 4.
That is impressive.
Well done.
And do you know what makes it even more impressive?
Tell me.
Second place is only 9 points. I mean, that's goodness me. That's 4 points away. You're almost twice as good as everyone else here except Kiva because she didn't play. Yeah. There we go. Very exciting. Okay, John, you had a bad day on 10 points and I had a normal day on 11 points. Yeah? And that's how that works. Fine. So we'll come back to the grand total so far as of day 11 later. But before that, it means I get to go first, John gets to go second, JJ gets to go third, and Seb gets to pick last. Is that the first time you've picked last, Seb?
Yeah, sure.
Is it your first win?
Yes, because I won.
Oh, yeah. Look at that.
That's going to be terrible, isn't it? He usually struggles when there's only been one person's score. He's going to have to remember 3.
He's going to have to remember so many scores. Okay, so tomorrow, match day 12, we have Croatia-Belgium, which I could have sworn was a game that already happened. Apparently not. I have absolutely no idea, and I'm going to say 1-0 because Croatia are going to hold onto the ball the entire time and Belgium are rubbish. Yeah? Fine. John, what do you think about Croatia-Belgium?
2-0.
2-0 to Croatia. JJ has asked Croatia. He said a 2-1 to Croatia. So, Seb, we've had 1-0, 2-0, 2-1.
3-0 Croatia.
Wow. Okay.
Ooh, he is drunk on his own success.
JJ is the only person to predict any goals for Belgium, and we've all predicted a Croatia win. Fine. Moving on to Canada-Morocco. Of course, Canada are already out of the tournament, but presumably will want to impress in their final game. Morocco could still go through, I believe, John.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, fine. I'm going to say it's 1-2. Morocco will have 2. John?
I'm going to go 0-2.
0-2. Okay. JJ Ball here has asked for a 0-2 and he's asked for a 1-2. Ah, so he gets his 0-1. So he thinks 0 point to Canada, 1 to Morocco. Seb Stafford-Blore?
A lot of scores I have to remember now. I will take a 1-1.
You can have a 1-1, good sir.
So you can't pick the same?
You can't.
Cannot. So it's fun. Because Seb got the best score today, he goes last,
in
which means
head,
he has the least chance.
Now like that scene in The Hangover with all the numbers going on around my head.
Sure.
Yeah. GIF.
Except we both know how good you are at maths. Although I can't talk, because today I can't count.
No.
Okay, Japan-Spain is next. I feel like Japan are already out. Oh, no, they're not. Oh, no, they're not. They could go through. They're going to play hard. They did beat Germany. They're good in transition. Am I right, John?
That's right, yeah.
Okay. 2-1 Japan.
Who are they playing?
Spain.
You're going 2-1 Japan?
I'm going 2-1 Japan. I'm doing it. John, what do you think?
I'll go 0-2.
Okay, that's different to what I said.
As long as that's Spain.
That is winning. To Spain, yes. Now, JJ says 3-0 to Spain. Seb Stafford-Ball, are you going to join me in Team Japan?
1-0 Spain.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So everybody else thinks
you're wrong
that they won't score any goals except me, who thinks they'll win. Now you can start to see why I'm in last place, can't you? Yeah. Okay, fine. And the final game of tomorrow is Costa Rica, Germany. 0-4. I'm going for a 4-0 win to Germany. John, what do you think?
I quite like 0-4.
Do you? You can't have it.
Let's go.
I think Germany have got a point to prove.
I've got to catch JJ up, haven't I? 0-5, yeah.
He's gone 5-0. Look at that. Okay, great. JJ Bull. That's, do you know what? This is exactly the right attitude now. We're over halfway through these games. You have to go for that. Okay, JJ has said for Costa Rica, 1-1. Germany, he went for 3-0 first, then he went for 4-0, then he went for 2-0, then he went for 5-0. So he can have a 3-0. Nobody to predict any goals for Costa Rica yet, Seb, so you could buck the trend there, but we've had a 3, a 4, and a 5-0.
2-0, Jeremy.
You think 2-0. Okay. What a boring set of predictions that is. But fine. That is our predictions for tomorrow. And Kiva, can I ask a favour of you?
Yes.
Would you read out the grand total so far for day 11? You can see here the name above the score. And if we go in reverse order, so we start here with me and my number.
So, Joe... 99.
Yes, I'm on 99.
Am I going backwards here?
I want to go in backwards order of number downwards.
Okay, this is very confusing for
me. So, then we go here.
Okay. John.
Oh, dear.
91.
John has slipped to third place because of a resurgent Seb Stafford-Blore.
86.
He's 5 ahead of me.
And, of course, in first place, Kiva.
JJ. And he is watching.
He is watching. That's true.
He's always watching.
How many points has he got?
80.
80. See, today, if he had forgotten, and we could have got him with that, the punishment of 5 penalty points per fixture, he would have been in last place.
But he hasn't forgotten. It would have also saved you from breaking 3 figures first.
Yeah. Well, you never know. I could get 0 points all of tomorrow. That'd be impressive, wouldn't it?
Yes, with your... your rogue Japan result coming through.
With my brilliant mind. we laugh. Anyway, John McKenzie, thanks so much for joining us today. Yes. Seb Stafford-Blore.
Thank you, Joe Devine.
Kiva O'Neill.
Thank you very much for having me.
And thank you to Craig and Jamie in the production box over there. Big thumbs up and a wave. Lovely job. Okay, we'll be back tomorrow with, I believe, JJ Bull is returning. We're going to watch some lovely games and have a good time. Yes. Okay.
Yes.
Bye now. Everybody wave at the cameras. Bye now. Yes, bye.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a 1-year subscription to The Athletic.
See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.